From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of March, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vegg. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. A quick reminder that you should visit our website at WILLAG.org. There today, you'll find not only our regular programming posted as podcast, you'll also find last week's Spring Outlook from the Beef House posted as a playlist. You can listen to what took place last week right there at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn today settled at $7.30. That was down 28 to the July at 6.97, 26 and a quarter lower. And December, your new crop at 6.29 and three quarters, 21 and a half cents lower. May soybean, $16.49 and a quarter a bushel, 9.5 cents lower. July down 9 3/4 at 16.26. And November beans at $14.60 and a quarter cent, down 6 3/4 cents. Bean meal, $6 lower. The bean oil for the day down 13 cents. Wheat futures soft red down 85 at $10.69 and a quarter. July at 10.42 and a half down 85 as well. That's the new crop harvest month. And the hard red at 10.72 and a half down 85 for the May. July down 85 at 10.58 and a half. Live cattle futures have finished at $135.52 and a half down $1.27 and a half for 100 pounds. The feeders at $167.40 down 2.5 cents. And lean hogs for the day $120.12 and a half cents. Up 40 cents. Crude oil at $95.48 a barrel, down 96 cents. Gasoline on wholesale price at $2.96 2/10, 0.3 cents lower. And diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.97 1/10, up 2.5 cents for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 33,464. Jackie Vex now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for being on this Wednesday with us. And thanks for coming to the Spring Outlook last week at the Beef House. It was a great day.
It was. It was just a wonderful day. In fact, I've thought about it often, Todd. And, you know, I still feel that that was like one of the best meetings we've ever had. The combination of us and FarmDoc just seemed to really meld well. Hope you can do it again. That would be great.
Yeah, me too. I'm sure we will. We'll be looking forward to next year. Let's, though, talk about what's been happening in the marketplace today. Can we begin with the support and resistance levels, please?
You betcha. May corn, 636, 843. July, 642 and 720. December, 632 and 674. When we look at May beans, 1628 and 1759. July 16.16 and 17.41, and November 13.87 and 15.55. April gold 18.92 and 21.12. Dow Jones 31.532 and 36.953. U.S. dollar 97.37, 99.50. And Bitcoin, now this is the wild one. Last week support was at 33,400. This week it's at 40,257 and resistance at 41,509. And I'll just move Todd on to manage money at the same time. Now here's where the wildness is coming in. Manage money they are now short 1,000 of the soft red wheat compared to long 31,000 last week. They are long 361,000 corn compared to 391,000. Long 159,000 beans compared to 218,000 last week. They are long 100,000 meal compared to 105,000 last week. And they are long 78,000 soy oil compared to 95,000 last week. So, you know, there's been a lot of flip-flopping and all kinds of interesting things going on. And the index traders, you know, that are hedging inflation, that's pretty interesting self. This week, they put in a new record at 541,675 long corn compared to the old record of 503,937. On beans, they put in a new record of 242,073 compared to the old record of 210,231. And I should take a step back here. That corn record that I read you was from August 3rd of 2010. So that's 12 years ago. The record for beans was 2020. On wheat, they didn't quite make the record, but they were at 206,616 long. And so you can certainly see that they are actively working on hedging inflation. Export inspections, well, wheat exports running 17 behind compared to 18 last week. We need 12.3 million bushels a week. Corn 14 behind compared to last year at 11% last week and 48.1 million bushels per week. And soybeans 21% behind compared to 21% last week. And we need 20.2 million bushels per week to meet the USDA expected average.
What do you see in the market action for the day?
Oh, got any antacids handy? I'm telling you, it's called milk and magnesia time. There's no question about that. Well, I'd have to start off, number one, by, can you say manage money, index fund movement, low volume, lack of open orders, and sideline traders?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all big contributing factors. Now, let's go to a ceasefire and a Russian withdrawal from Kiev, which was announced this morning, if the Ukraine declares neutrality and accepts limits on its armed forces. And that's just added another layer to that ever-shifting information from the Ukraine and how sensitive this market is. You know, we had a lot of what-ifs built in here. You add the Ukraine thing, which really bombarded wheat, and then the weather in the plains went from dry to wetter today. A whole 1/10 of an inch to 3/4 of an inch in Kansas, which I don't think is going to make a hill beans, but you know what? This is a futures market, so we trade the futures. Other market action, of course, is that spread of COVID in China, you know, because they shut down some areas, is really starting to concern people about the economy and import demand. We actually have some people who have already, I think it's premature, but who have already dropped bean demand. NOPA crush for February, second highest February on record. And soy oil stocks did go up, not a big surprise. And I think to a very small degree, the Fed meeting, you know, inflation's high, especially food inflation. Crude, wow, unbelievable. 9 days ago, April crude was at 130.50. And it was well below 100 today, back in the 95, 96 area mostly. But it still looks like it could go higher. You know, and so there's just this is an ever shifting, almost like quicksand, you know, these markets right now, because, you know, you can be walking on firm ground one day and suddenly you're up to your neck the next day. And so you can see why we see some traders who are sitting on the sidelines right now. There's just too many questions out there in a lot of ways.
What fundamentals are we still watching?
Well, I think, you know, we have to take into account that there's been a lot of damage done over in Ukraine. In fact, they talk about some of the major rail movement areas. And so it's still a situation where we expect to see very good corn exports at some point in time, possibly wheat exports too. You know, and you look at the rest of the world, and there's so many places in the world, Todd, that at this moment are, because of food inflation, are actually banning exports. And so, I think from a fundamental perspective, that's part of it. The other part of it is we're all looking down to the 30, you know, to the end of the month for the acreage numbers. You know, we saw some acreage numbers come out that were pretty conservative, I thought. I think it was 181 million total between corn and beans. It's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. So, you know, that's in the background here, too. The part I think that's you know, we talked a little bit at the meeting last week about the bean corn ratio. We normally look for 2.5. Well, that's, you know, with input costs this year, that's probably not quite accurate, but it's been running about 2.2. We're back up to 2.3. So, you know, that says that either, to me, that said either bean futures had to go down and corn futures stay the same, or corn futures had to come up and bean futures stayed the same. Going to be interesting. I think, you know, when you look at the bigger picture from a fundamental standpoint, I don't know if we're going to see that much change in the in the major states that have the ability to produce, you know, 220, 250 bushels of corn or more. But I do think that we could see some real strong changes on the bean side in places like the Dakotas, you know, in maybe some of the southern states. And so it's, I'll be looking forward to seeing what it says. Let's just put it that way.
What do we know about crops in Argentina and Brazil that are yet to be harvested, and still some of them in the middle of their growing season, even the beginning for the safrinha corn crop?
Well, that's absolutely the truth, you know, and it hasn't been easy. I mean, they've gotten some rain down there. I was looking at how soon they were going to need fertilizer for their next season down in Brazil, and that's a real big question for them, you know, because of the uncertainty of being able to get the fertilizer. But they're going to need additional fertilizer supplies within just a few months from now. So this whole thing is, we talked last week about the fact that they import 85% of their fertilizer needs. And so they came up with a plan this week that they're going to reduce that to 45% by 2050. That's a long ways away. While at the same time, doubling the amount of fertilizer needed. So what does that tell you about expansion down there? So what they're thinking about doing is increasing domestic production. You know, they're talking about mining things in the indigenous areas, so that may not go over so well. More efficient use of fertilizer, new technologies, mineral inputs, innovation, environmental sustainability. And so, you know, that is, it'll be interesting to see if they can get it through. They are expecting drier than normal weather in southern Brazil, March, April, May. They got 94% of their safrinha crop corn planted. So now, of course, the attention plant or changes over to what the weather is going to be like. And so CONAB warned that the rainfall in southern Brazil could be below normal, and it definitely could impact the safrinha corn crop. Argentina suspended soy meal and soy oil exports this week. They announced it over the weekend. It's believed the exports were suspended so that export taxes on meal and oil could be increased from the current 31% to 33%. And so now, guess what? You know, that would make it equivalent to the 33% that they are on soybeans. But now there's rumors that they're going to 35% on soybeans. Because, and it makes sense because of the tax differential between soybeans and the products is the incentive for the crusher to process beans instead of just sending them to export. So they haven't had any reports yet of soybeans being harvested in the core areas of Argentina. The soybeans are about 30 to 40% maturing, so it could start pretty soon. Interesting things happening down south.
We haven't talked about China for a while, but they've got COVID problems again in the ports. Is that a concern?
It is definitely a concern. There's no question about that. And, you know, it's a concern all over the world because so much gets shipped out of there. You know, China, their economic situation is pretty tenuous. And I think one of the things that's happening at the moment anyway is that, you know, China has definitely backed Russia in the Ukrainian war. And the last thing that they would want to see are any sanctions coming against them. And so I think that they have a lot to deal with over there from a political standpoint. We're, you know, I'm reading things about the people who live in China are not really thrilled with what's going on just in general. And, you know, food inflation is everywhere. And so China is going to have to do everything they possibly can to secure as many inputs as they possibly can to keep those people happy. You know, you keep people happy by feeding them and keeping them working. Those are the two keys. And when you're in a country like China where you have, you know, 1.4 billion population and a very small government, you better keep those people happy. And so I think that their challenges are huge, you know, from a banking standpoint. It's going to be a very interesting spring as we move further. And it'll also be interesting to see what happens if the ceasefire in Ukraine actually happens, because we do know that some of the banking situations have been where they were going around the U.S. sanctions and going over to the China banks. But I read last week that stopped. So, you know, they're just what a convoluted situation, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you for helping us to try to make sense of it. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds like a deal. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Here's one quick quasi-news item for the day. At 8 a.m. Central Time this morning, Ukrainian President Zelensky addressed the United States Congress, imploring them to do more for his country as it wars with Russia. At the end of that address, he spoke directly to them in English. Here's a portion of what he had to say.
Today, the Ukrainian people are defending not only Ukraine. We are fighting for the values of Europe and the world, sacrificing our lives in the name of the future. That's why today the American people are helping not just Ukraine, but Europe and the world to keep the planet alive, to keep justice in history. Now I'm almost 45 years old. Today my age stopped when the hearts of more than 100 children stopped beating. I see no sense in life if it cannot stop the death. And this is my main mission as the leader of my people, great Ukrainians. And as the leader of my nation, I am addressing the President Biden. You are the leader of the nation, of your great nation. I wish you to be the leader of the world. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace. Thank you. Slava Ukraini.
That was a portion of the closing comments made in English by President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine to the United States Congress earlier today, in which he implored them to act against Russia if they could, to increase sanctions and enforce a no-fly zone. He received a standing ovation from both sides of the aisle. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast, as we always do, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Hope things are doing well there in your part of the world.
Yeah, not too bad. Another beautiful sunny day, and it's got the flavor of spring in the air.
Well, speaking of that, the hard red winter wheat region is a lot closer to you than it is to me. How are things faring for producers in those areas now?
Well, it's a bit mixed. You know, there's not been a lot of precipitation down in parts of Texas and even parts of Oklahoma, still fairly dry, running some rather notable deficits. But, you know, it was a week and a half ago that we got that snow event across central and northern Kansas and some neighboring areas there in parts of Colorado and southern Nebraska. So those areas have had some moisture that's kind of helping to green the crop up a little bit. Now, we got real cold after that. Precipitation took place, but that has all changed again, and we're back into the 60s and 70s yesterday. We'll do that again today, and we'll probably get even hotter later this weekend, probably 70 and 80 degree temperatures coming up. But the news for them is really about the precipitation. There's a small disturbance that will pass through that area tomorrow, and it will probably not produce real well in the heart of the hard red winter wheat country. Eastern fringes of crop country in Kansas and eastern Colorado are the areas they'll probably do all right with that particular system. But it's the event that occurs on Sunday night through Tuesday that everybody's watching. This is a very strong upper level low pressure center, and it is supposed to move over directly over the hard red winter wheat country. And in situations like that, in a normal year, we can get some pretty impressive thunderstorm activity occurring, especially since it's going to get very warm to hot before that whole event arrives. So temperatures will be in the 70s and 80s, like I said, ahead of it. Now, behind it, temperatures will probably be in the 40s and 50s. So that kind of gives you an ideal kind of contrast we're talking about. As we get involved with that system, there's a pretty good chance that we'll see rain occurring across a big part of the production region. And the amounts that are going to occur will probably run from a half to 1.5 inches. So this is a nice event. This morning's computer forecast models may have gotten a little carried away, though, in the southwest part of the plains. I think this storm system will likely take a path a little bit farther to the northeast of what's being on the forecast models right now. And if that happens, we'll probably drag dry air into the Texas Panhandle and parts of southwestern Kansas. And, of course, if that occurs, then we aren't going to do much to whittle away the drought. But today's markets were, to a certain degree, reflecting the weather bias in the models. And we certainly are interested in seeing what happens with this event. We will definitely get some moisture that will help green up the crop. Whether it's enough to get them very far down the road, that remains to be seen. I don't see much other precipitation in the balance of the 10 days coming up, though.
If you look out to the rest of the country, what do you see for the Corn Belt, maybe into the Delta region, which is the first one, which to begin really planting corn and soybeans, although Texas started some time ago?
Yeah, you know, this La Nina event that we're dealing with right now has had an impact on the Western Corn Belt, too, and keeping the moisture profile a little short in Iowa and Missouri. Well, the same storm system we talked about a moment ago that's going to impact hard red winter wheat country will go right across Missouri and parts of Iowa as well. And so we're looking at a little bit of a short-term boost in soil moisture across some of those areas. And if that indeed does take place, we'll certainly be in a better position to make it started with some oat planting and maybe a little bit of other field work ahead of corn planting down the road. Still too early to get some of those crops in the ground, but you got to start somewhere with some moisture. So this is a positive thing. When you get east of the Mississippi River, there's plenty of moisture around. And in fact, this next storm system, in fact, both of them, the one that occurs tomorrow into Friday and the one that occurs next week, both of them will bring more moisture into the lower Midwest. So we'll be plenty wet, if not a little bit too wet at that point in time. So I think we're still faced with a little bit of a potential for planting delays in late March and April in the Delta, the Tennessee River Basin area, and eventually into that lower Midwest. But we've got a long ways to go. So hopefully we will get some breaks in the pattern and be able to get these crops in as quickly as we can. I am still concerned about the big picture, long run, where we might have some dryness to deal with this year. So there's going to be an extra sense of urgency to try to get crops in the ground and started as quickly as we can this year.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Have yourself a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Join us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.